Now, right from the off, I need to say that I'm really proud of my mum. She's in her 80s, and a few months ago, having bought a new printer, she wanted to scan a document. And so she called me and said, "How do I scan this document?" And the trouble is, she'd bought a printer that I know nothing about. It's a make of printer scanner that I've never dealt with. And because I live a long way from home and can't just pop round, I couldn't help her. I couldn't, and as a result, she was a bit disappointed, to say the least. However, not wishing to be defeated, she made herself a coffee and sat down and thought about it, and then just said, "I'll go and ask Google." So she typed into Google, "How do I scan a document on this type of printer?" And she put in the make and model. And sure enough, it led her to a YouTube video, which she watched. And then she called me back and said, "I've managed to scan the document." I have to say, I have never been prouder of her. But it leaves me wondering, when it comes to our faith, how do we know what to do? Where do we go for help? Which is where this passage in Isaiah 30 comes in. Isaiah 30, verse 21 says, "Whether you turn from the right or to the left, your ears will hear a voice saying, 'This is the way, walk in it.'" Surely that's the answer to my question. Surely God will speak to us. Surely the Lord will direct us. The problem is, it's very easy to lift this verse out of its context. And so in doing so, you create a generic verse of encouragement that we can call on, and in a sense, a panacea, an answer to all forms of guidance. I wonder how many times you have been in church and you've heard it said, "The Lord has said to me," or heard someone say, in a model of the Old Testament prophet, "God has told me to tell you this." And I wonder if you've ever paused to say, why has the Lord spoken to just a single person? Why am I not hearing the same thing? Because when we come to this verse in passage in Isaiah 30, whether you turn to the right or to the left, your ears will hear a voice saying, "This is the way, walk in it." It's not given to an individual, it's given to a people, the people of Judah. To set Isaiah 30 in its context, it's a place of a conversation between the Lord and his people during a time of national emergency. The Babylonian army are massing on its northern borders. And rather than trust in the Lord for help, Hezekiah sees this massive army and sends emissaries off down to Egypt to go and get another massive army from the south to help them. And this promise, whether you turn to the right or turn to the left, your ears will hear a voice saying, "This is the way in it," comes straight after the Lord's acknowledgement that Judah has become a rebellious people. They've said to the Lord himself, "We don't want any more visions." They no longer want to be confronted with the fact that they are to trust in the Lord. There's a sense where they have clamped their hands over their ears and they're crying out, "La, la, 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 I don't want to hear." The promise that the people of Judah will hear the voice that will guide them in the way that they should walk comes after the Lord's judgment on their sin, after he describes it as a high wall that will crack and collapse and fall in upon them. And as is often the case in the Old Testament, this is good news of salvation that comes after the judgment that God lays upon his people. As so often, this reveals the depth of the Lord's love for his people, no matter how much they reject him, still he reaches out to them. No matter how far they stray from his ways, still he finds a way to call them back. And it leaves me wondering, in times of difficulty, as individuals, but more significantly as a church, how do we hear that voice of the Lord saying, this is the way, walk in it? Is it simply the minister saying, God has told me to tell you? Or is there more to it than that? Is this something in the communal way? Together we find a way forward through difficult times. If it is, then waiting together is part of that process. Earlier in Isaiah 30, we didn't read it, but if you'd gone back a few verses, you would find the Lord saying that it is in repentance and rest is your salvation, in quietness and strength. In quietness and trust is your strength. It's about waiting. Now, we're only 2 weeks into Advent. I'm sure you're already fed up with me saying Advent is all about waiting. But it's not waiting aimlessly. It's waiting with purpose. It's waiting knowing that the Lord will come because he has promised, and being prepared for that moment when he arrives, which is what happens in the New Testament. Tradition has it that there's 400 years between the final prophet Malachi and the coming of John the Baptist. 400 years of waiting. That's numerous generations of waiting and not seeing. That's numerous generations of hope and expectations left unfulfilled. So maybe we might be forgiven to see why the people of God missed the fact that God came to them when he came to them in Jesus. Maybe after so many generations of waiting, waiting and seeing nothing, waiting and hearing nothing, we might forgive them that when God arrives, they don't see him. Well, maybe we might forgive them if it wasn't for the fact of John the Baptist. The report of John the Baptist calling out in the desert area appears in all the Gospels. It's slightly different, as it always is in John's Gospel. The story's told slightly different. But in Matthew, Mark, and here in Luke, it is a calling out to be prepared. Get yourself ready, for God is coming. The Messiah you have been waiting for is coming. When you place John the Baptist's words in a context of 400 years that have gone by, and you see them as a lone voice crying out in the wilderness, in a desert place, it's easy to make the association between this dry, featureless, lifeless place where John the Baptist is crying out and the empty experience of not hearing God speak for generation after generation after generation, of feeling alone in a troubled times for generation after generation after generation, feeling abandoned by God for generation after generation after generation. Now, the little I know of many of the forms of depression and mental illness, they're made a great deal worse by this sense of loneliness, the sense of abandonment, the sense of being on your own and not accompanied. Whereas these forms of illness are often made much better when we can talk about them, when we are accompanied, when people travel with us through the journey of darkness, when there's someone walking alongside us, which is why waiting together as a community of faith is so significant, because we help and encourage one another during the days of where there's seemingly an absence of change. We hold each other in times of doubt. We encourage each other during times of anxiety and fear. The process of waiting together as a community of God's people for the promise of hearing his voice And direction is significant. But waiting together means preparing together. Which is why the voice in the wilderness crying out, "Prepare the way of the Lord," is so significant. Because preparation gives waiting purpose. Despite the implications of what their training is for, it's no surprise that soldiers enjoy training. It's no surprise that armies are frequently sent out to do maneuvers, to practice the battles they may have to fight. Part of the reason for that is because if they don't, they get bored. And boredom is corrosive. Boredom is as corrosive as anxiety and fear is corrosive. And in some cases, it can feed anxiety and fear. Then it's no surprise that the mission of John the Baptist is to fulfill the role of one crying out in the wilderness to prepare. And from that moment on, for those who will wait for the coming of Jesus and those who will follow after as the followers of Jesus will become those whose mission it is to be prepared, to be in a constant state of preparation. Because constantly preparing not only fills the time, it only makes the gap between Jesus having come and his promise to return and his actual return bearable. It means that when God comes to us, we recognize him for who he is. We see his hand at work for what he is doing. Which is what is really sad, and it's probably the saddest thing about the whole of the Gospels and the book of Acts. Because the Pharisees and the Sadducees, those who were entrusted to teach the law, to encourage God's people to remain faithful as they waited, those who are so often portrayed as villains in the New Testament waited so patiently for the Lord to come. And yet when he arrived, they missed him. They hadn't prepared for him to come in the way that he did. It's a bit like the Kit Kat advert of the 1980s. I don't know if you can remember back that far, but there was an advert for the chocolate bar Kit Kat that was basically a photographer by a panda enclosure. And he would sit at his camera watching and waiting and watching and waiting. And eventually he gets hungry and bored. So he turns his back and opens up the Kit Kat, has a break, during which time the panda comes out and skates around the enclosure, making faces at the back of the photographer, only to disappear just as the photographer has finished his break and turns and looks back. No panda. Despite the fact that John the Baptist called to prepare the way for the Lord, there were a whole swathe of people who had waited for Jesus to come and had missed him. And I wonder how often we do that. I wonder how often in times of anxiety, in times of fear, in times of trouble, in times of, just when we really want God to show up, he shows up, but we miss him. We miss him because we've not prepared well for his coming. But if waiting is about being prepared, preparing the way for the coming of the Lord, so that when he comes, we recognize him for who he is, now, maybe one of the greatest temptations placed before us as the followers of Jesus is to only pray, only read the scriptures, only gather together when life is difficult. When life is good, or quite simply just okay, nothing to write home about, but okay, then actually we can do our things in our own strength. Actually, during those times, why do we need to come to the Lord and seek him? And yet it's during those times that actually good habits are formed. It is during the good times that we actually find it easier to read the scriptures, find it easier to come and pray, find it easier to join together because there is nothing aching. And those are the times that the good habits are built. Like all Proverbs, there is a kernel of wisdom that says, make hay while the sun shines. While life is good, practice and learn good disciplines of prayer, of reading the scriptures, of gathering together. So that when we do come to the times of troubles, actually we have something to work with. We are prepared. Sad thing is, by the time Jesus arrived, the people of God seem to have given up waiting. And having given up, they've lost the ability to recognize Jesus for who he is. They cannot see that he is the voice crying out in the wilderness. He is the voice that says, this is the way, walk in it. And I can't help wondering, in the midst of our waiting and hoping that God will come to us in the midst of our struggles, in the midst of the things we wish he would show up into, what if he has come and we missed him? I love the song. It's a secular song, so far as I know, by Joan Osborne. What if God was one of us? I love that line. What if God was one of us, just a stranger on a bus? What if God was to come to us, a stranger we didn't recognize? What then? I wonder what preparing means to us. Preparing, yes, for Christmas, the time when we will celebrate Christ's coming, but ultimately for Christ's return. And in between, his coming to us in the times when we most need him. When I began this morning, I said I was proud of my mum. I was proud of how resourceful she was as she managed to navigate and find a way of working out how to use a printer she'd never used before and one I had no idea how to use. What I didn't tell you was how long it took her to get to the point where she could open a web page, type into Google, and how do I use this type of printer and how do I scan a document. I didn't tell you about the how patient she had to be to learn to even switch on the computer and make it work. How patient she had to be to learn to open a web page. How to navigate a QWERTY keyboard. The endless closing of the wrong window, the endless having to backspace because she's typed the wrong thing in, endlessly frustrating with wrestling with documents. When I heard with joy that she had found her way to a YouTube video that showed her how to work her scanning facility on our printer, it's easy to forget the years of painstaking practice that took her to that point. And so it is with following Jesus. The promise that we remember at Advent is the Lord will come to us. It's what we celebrate at Christmas. Jesus has come. But we remember at this table that he's coming again. Advent is a time of waiting. It reminds us to wait for the Lord, for his coming to us. Waiting for that voice saying, this is the way, walk in it. But that waiting is full of preparation, filled with that which the Carmelite monk, Brother Lawrence, says is practicing the presence of God. Of living an outer life of Jesus that we see described in both the Old and the New Testaments. Of developing a practice of reading the scriptures and praying, but praying together, coming together to worship, coming together to share our experience of God, whether that is together in person, whether that is together on Zoom, or whether that is some sort of hybrid model where you join us on Zoom and we're present in the church at the same time. It is nevertheless coming together to wait for the Lord. That leaves me with a question. How's your preparation going? How well are you preparing for the Lord to come? Where is it you're laying down good habits so that when the Lord comes, you will recognize him for who he is. Amen.